The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, Louisette.
Hi. How are you?
It's been many years.
I should say so. How many exactly? When did you guys move?
We moved to Atlanta. Okay, so you have kids now as well, right?
Yeah, so
do you do all math backwards, like trying to figure out how old your kids were and when you got married and then like that?
Exactly, based on that's the way it goes usually, right?
Right. So Emma's 13, so that's when we moved. We moved when she was 3 months old.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that's how I actually, with this case, everything is based on the fact that I had my baby 6 weeks into, you know, this case kind of rearing its head. Well, really just the knowledge of Harvey. So that's exactly how I mark the time too, because we're almost on 3 years.
Well, we'll back up in a moment, but I want to start with how I sort of found out. I probably saw when the press conferences started with you back with Gloria Allred. I'm sure I did, but it didn't really click. And Stacy probably even said something to me. But again, I have 3 children. My memory doesn't work too well. But I was running and listening to, are you even aware of all the podcasts and documentaries that you're a part of at this point?
No. I'm a mother of little kids, so no. But that would be good to probably hear some of them. I do remember I did do something on NPR with Gloria Allred back, you know.
Right, but wasn't even that. This was like last year. It was the first one with that was extensively with what's her name? Who's the assistant that took the settlement years ago?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, there's been several. So,
but there was one big one she's been in all of them. She was like, she took one of the first settlements something happened in France. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
What's her name? I want to say it's a Zelda or a Zoe, something with a Z.
Zelda Perkins.
Okay, so it was this big podcast with her. It was mostly about her. And then at one point, and so they were talking to various people. And then at one point, it was like, blah, 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 Louisette Geis. And then she started, and then your voice came on in my ears in my podcast. And I'm like, I totally know her. So
well, that's good to actually know that existed. So I'll have to listen to
it. No, it's a good one. It's probably one of the better ones. And I'll have to go back and listen. Like, it's not the recent one, you know, with what's his name back in, I want to say, is it 2001 or 2?
Gosh, yeah, that sounds about right.
But this is all pre the stuff that had happened with Harvey. Yes.
Yes. And happened in 2008.
Right. So you were a writer and an actor back then. Could you remind me what you were doing in 2001 or 2?
Oh goodness gracious! You're asking another parent to remember that far back.
That's impressive. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, look, I moved here when I turned 18. I mean, I had. I'm sorry, not moved here. I moved here when I turned 21, but I'd been in the business. I was an actress, in musicals, you know, really even in high school. So 18 is, you know, calling it late, but, you know, I did professional, acting in Miami as well. But so when I moved out to California, I mean, I had the training of, learning how to write, scripts. And I learned pretty quickly, even in Florida. I mean, when I lived in Florida, I wrote a script, I wrote a full fledged movie that got produced. So because again, it was always pretty, obvious to me that if you want to make something happen, you have to create the content. So, I loved acting first, but I knew that I had to also create the content. And so that's really kind of what pushed me even in meeting Harvey, was that I knew if I could bring some content, then that would hopefully parlay into other jobs, you know, whether an actress, singer, etc.
But when I knew you, were you just sort of doing the hustle? You were trying to get gigs, like writing and acting? Like, I'm just trying to remember what, like, back then.
Yeah, I mean, I worked at a music studio for many, many years. I was a producer. I was also a singer. So I had a 3-octave range. I used to sing on a lot of these commercials. I loved all that. But again, I worked at the music company because, you know, if you're producing something, it's always a little bit easier to get in line to audition. So yeah, I've always been somebody like who believes in creating your own, you know, bringing a little bit more to the table, just because, you know, that's the only way, you know, you can get any control to actually be in it.
Well, it feels like in 2020, that's a very common notion, right?
For one
to fire up YouTube or TikTok or any platform and be like, hey, look at me, I can create as well as, well, I have talent, but I can also produce and promote. So that wasn't nearly as common back in 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005.
No, not at all. I mean, I had a few writer, actor friends, but a few. I mean, that wasn't the norm.
But just you had this instinct that, hey, I can probably get to the front of the line if I'm actually not just some actress.
Absolutely. I mean, in addition to that, I had a lot of actor, you know, friends, and I loved bringing them into the fold. So to me, it was, I don't know. I mean, I have a father who's a lawyer, God bless him, and a mom who's a nurse, and they had a really kind of go get 'em attitude with me and, you know, make it happen yourself. And so, you know, for better or worse, I listened to them. And I think that really propelled me to just take the stance, like, even when I first arrived here in Los Angeles, like, hey, yeah, you know, you better create your own stuff. I mean, I did a lot of sketch comedy. I think when I was hanging out with you, I was doing a lot of sketch comedy at the time. I, you know, was from studying at Groundlings to shows at Acme. And then, you
so
know,
were
I did-
you, so were you in that group with Stacey and Josh Gad?
Yes. I was in so it's so funny. Because Josh Gad
is now world famous.
Yes, I know. And my dog is named Olaf, which I was thinking the other day. Speak to him, you know, you're still in my life, buddy. But yeah, I did a Josh Gad and we had a improv troupe. And so, you know, I was absolutely a big part of that. And, you know, I had a lot of great memories, actually, of all of the more theater, I should say. It was a lot more fun than some of the stuff, as we all know now, that I had to deal with in the movie industry.
Well, just for my audience sake, because I've never said this out loud, you know, we've watched Josh like become, you know, worldwide famous. And I have very distinct memories of dropping Stacey off at practice for this improv group and doing a show. Wasn't the group something C, like the option is C or option C or something like that? And seeing him, and so then when he started to pop, like way before Olaf,
yeah,
Stacey and I are like, that's Josh Gad. Like, that guy was in your troupe, your improv troupe. And so anyhow, so it just sort of occurred to me like, oh, maybe that's how I knew you or how you were connected to Stacey.
I was in two different groups though, because I don't feel like Stacey was in my group, but I was in a troupe for sure. And in fact, there's even online some ridiculous sketch comedy that I'm in with Josh about a board game. I mean, you know, so it's, yeah, and his lovely wife, Ida, knew her well too. And she's, you know, I really liked her. So I actually went and saw him when he was first in Spelling Bee in New York. Because I went out there and I went and saw those two because, you know, we were in the group together and yeah, just amazing what's transpired for him.
Yeah. Yes. So do you remember, so who set up this Harvey meeting, and at what, if any, percentage of don't be left in the room with this guy had you heard at that time?
I love that you want a percentage. 33.3. Well,
I was trying to think of a way to phrase it.
I know. I come on. We just talked about being in a comedy group. We got to get some laughs here. is such a non-fun subject. You know, so the setup to the meeting was, I mean, I met him at the Cannes Film Festival like about 6 months previous. And then when I was at Sundance, I saw him just honestly in the breakfast room. So I wasn't, there was no like, there was nothing set up, if you will. And when I saw he and his assistant, whom I know, I just went up and said, "Hey, how are you? You know, I haven't seen you in a long time, you know, just pleasantries." They invited me to one of his screenings that night. And I was obviously, you know, honored to go. And that was it. And then at the screening, I just, again, said, thank you. You know, again, just being nice, normal human, saying, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it. And he said, you know, why are you here? I said, I'm here to pitch this script. And he said, well, why don't you pitch it to me? You know, and it was the last night. So to put context on it, it was the last night of Sundance. And it was, you know, getting to be around 9-ish, you know, because it was a screening, it was the end of the screening. And after we were going to meet where we both were staying, we were both staying in the same hotel, but we were going to meet where we saw each other at breakfast time in the restaurant there. But, you know, as we got there, we literally sat down and they came out and they're like, yeah, you can't order anything. You know, we're closing. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's that moment for me was the biggest moment. I'm here able to pitch my script to one of the biggest producers. And great, the restaurant's closing. And I mean, you got to understand, I mean, it's snowing outside. It's, you know, this isn't like, oh, just walk next door and go to another restaurant. Right. I mean, it was a nice hotel, but it was like out in the middle of nowhere, you know? So he said, well, why don't you, you know, come and pitch your script in my office? And I said, you know, now by that time I had been in the business. So let me talk about percentages more about my business. The business I had already known, like the year previous, I had a pretty bad run-in with another producer who was pretty scary. And literally since like day one of being in this business, like I would have sadly like horrific times with producers, you know, whether what they were saying to me or trying to do to me, whether I was being fired and literally told to my face, I'm going to fire you, you know, if you don't do this XYZ sexual act for me. So, you know, I was no dummy in that perspective. But as far as just Harvey, you know, I had heard that he had slept with women, but I didn't know if it was consensual or not. I mean, you know, there was no manual. So I just simply said to him right off the bat, I said, I will go take this meeting with you if you shake my hand that you will not touch me.
Said that to him.
Oh, yeah, I said it to him. Yeah, I mean, this is all part of all the documentation, which is why when he says, you know, he thought everything was consensual, it's like, really, buddy? I'm like a great example of that it wasn't, because I actually pre-vetted this meeting by saying no, you know.
Well, so I would like to pause you there, because why I want to have you on this show, why I want to speak to you is the broader questions, because Stacey and I have talked about this a lot, and to educate, as hard as it is to penetrate people once they have an opinion, this entire concept, right? You know, we're hearing even more of it now with all this racial stuff. It's like, well, I'm not a racist, you know, but, or why is this a problem? Like, why don't people just listen to the cops? Why did they go to that hotel room? So, you know, Stacey and I, when these things have come up, Stacey's like, oh, you mean every job I've ever had where a man has said something inappropriate to me, right? So if you're a female and, you know, dare I say an attractive female from the time you're however age, it is like this part of life, sadly, that you learn to navigate, right?
Absolutely.
And that you learn to, you're in a position, you're forced into a position of, can I just sort of flirt my way out of this? Can I say something interesting to sort of distract him to, I'm in real danger? And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand, is that you're a pretty smart cookie, Louisette, and you're a pretty tough chick, right? So you're not, before you even get in the room, you're like, hey, dude, don't touch me. A lot of these women, you know, and you just see it over and over, they just thought, well, why would I think anything bad was going to happen? This producer wants to talk to me. So can you sort of speak to that more?
Sure. I mean, again, it is absolutely unfortunate that it had to be part of my daily navigation in the world, but it was. And look, nobody, when I was raised by my parents, I mean, actually, as all this information came out, my mom said to me, like, you know, you told me this stuff was happening, but I guess I just didn't want to believe it was that bad. And I understand, because you're a parent too. Like, for my daughters, if I heard somebody, now I think I'd be different because, you know, I've obviously stepped up on this, but it is a different time. I understand all that, but we have been asked as women overall to, yeah, laugh it off. And that's how that guy is. And how do you literally just skirt your way out of the room without getting in trouble? And how many jobs have you lost because you wouldn't do what they asked? And for me, honestly, many. I think the predominant problem, shall we say, for me is that I didn't do any of those things. I mean, I didn't get the big movies. I would get some roles, and obviously I did. I did work, but by no means the amount of work I think I would have had if I, you know, if I had said yes to them. That's just the truth. So with him, I mean, you have to understand too, by that time, and again, I said a year previous to meeting with him, I had a bad experience actually at Fox Studios. So I know that's shocking, but.
Well, people are aware of Fox Television. I'm not sure they say they conflate it with the studio.
No. I did a TV show. So it was not like, this is nothing to do with news or whatever, but you know, I had a pretty bad experience with another producer. And so you have to understand. So now we're going a year ahead. I already knew. And like that guy just like literally came into my green room. Like he came into my dressing room. So it was a different scenario. But I had obviously been around the block, shall we say. And I knew when a producer asked you to do something, it's very plausible that they're not really asking about your script. They're asking to, you know, be with you. Right. But that's why I wanted to let him know up front. Hey, buddy. I told him, I was like, okay, I want you to shake my hand that you will not touch me if I go take this meeting with you. And I said, there's a camera right there. Cause we were in a hallway, you know, we're in the restaurant hall, and there, you know, these hotels had, they had video cameras. And so I said, I want you to shake my hand that you will not touch me. And I was like, there's a camera right there. And he laughed and he shook my hand and he's like, yeah, of course. I'm not gonna. All right, and off we go to his office. So, I mean, yes, I agree. I understand why it's hard for people to say, well, you're in his hotel room. Of course, what did you expect to happen? Well, great. But I was in his office. I am a professional. I had worked by that time a long, I mean, that was 2008. You know, I had worked on my script for 4 years solidly. You know, this is an opportunity. You would never say to a man, well, don't go take a meeting because you don't know what's going to happen. No one would ever say that. But you say that to the woman, well, what the hell are you doing in that office? That's the thing that bothers me, because look, I did try to stop it. I said, you can't touch me. But obviously with him, you know, he really has a sickness, as I think we all know now. And we had a great meeting initially. And then, you know, off comes the clothes. He goes to the bathroom. He, you know, shows up back in his iconic robe now, which, you know, all of this stuff is nothing that I knew. If I knew, I wouldn't have gone, obviously. You know, I mean, so I had to then again navigate myself safely out of there. And only recently did I realize how damn lucky I was. I mean, that experience though really taught me, you know what, Louisa, you're never going to win this. You are never going to win, because it was too often that I would have producers or, you know, really casting directors as well. You know, it got old. And so I literally had to stop, and I did. And that was probably the hardest thing for me, because it was part of my soul. Like, I really enjoyed being in this business. You know, it just was part of my DNA and I enjoyed it. So to give it up completely and to get into a completely different business, you know, said a lot to how much I didn't want to be treated that way on a daily basis.
Well, and again, there are women that do go through with something because, again, they don't know because they're in fear. And this is, again, what the straight white man seems to not understand. It's like, if you've never been followed around a store for no reason, you don't know what it's like to be a black person, right? If you've not been a woman in a situation where you were, and I tried to explain that to somebody the other day, like, you, if you got on an elevator, you would never be afraid of whoever else got on that elevator with you, right? But if you're, if you're a woman of, especially if you're sort of smaller and some larger person gets on the elevator with you, right? So to try to grasp these concepts and, you know, that men and I guess women both foolishly understand, like, oh, well, I would never do that. Like, I would just have left, or I would have told him X, Y, Z. And it's just never that simple.
It isn't, because especially too, then once you think that, so for myself, I'll just speak for myself, is that, you know, once I am in that room and I know I pre-vetted my conversation, like, you know, I'm not into you, buddy. I mean, I gave no indication that I was into him. I sat on the couch, you know, farthest from him. He sat in a chair. We had a great conversation about his film that just, you know, was screened that night. And we were talking and just started talking about my script. I mean, there was, and so for example, too, one of the things that came up was, there was a picture of a woman on the table, like a headshot. And I remember it because he said, oh yeah, that woman gave me your headshot. And she said she would do anything for me. I remembered it being like, and so I said, yeah, well, good for you. You know, why are you telling me that? Like, this is a business meeting. You know, why is that part of this conversation? But obviously he's testing me, you know, and this is what they do. And I didn't understand that. To be honest, this is not like, you don't learn predatory behavior 101 in high school. You know, you just don't learn that. So like, until you start to experience it and then you talk to your friends or whatever, you have to learn how to navigate it. It's strange and odd. And honestly too, I just kind of hoped, I don't know, I think maybe I hoped there was like at least one producer who wasn't going to be super smarmy and creepy.
Well, the part that's been so fascinating to me is, you know, every guy, including myself, has said or done something on the creepy side in their life. Okay. They'd be lying if they said they never did or said, called somebody, texted, did something they are not proud of. Okay. However, this pathology, right? And you know, we're understanding that it's a sickness, that this new thing of like the exposing themselves part, like this thing with Louis as well that came out, is like so beyond comprehension, because it's not something, how do I say this? Like, the whole idea of will she or won't she, if I say or do this, like this cat and mouse game that men like are playing, and that sometimes is both ways, but when it's not, like, you need to fucking get, like, stop trying to hit on someone. But this, I think of, oh, this will work. This is the part, like the getting naked and the pulling the thing out. This is the part to me that's like, who thinks this is a good idea? Like, nobody thinks this is a good idea.
Well, I would totally agree with you. That never has really worked for me either. I mean, you know, especially given the fact that, I mean, he excused himself to go to the bathroom and then shows up. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I really boil it down to more that I think when you do behave this way, when this is like normal for you, I think what we are neglecting, because we don't, like, we would never do this, you and I per se, is that we don't understand what is exciting about it. And I do think this now is that he was more excited by the fear in me. Does that make sense? So it's not even, it's not really the sexuality of it. It's not the, you know, getting me to touch him. It's witnessing just the face, right? Like, and in him watching me, you know, go through a maze that he has now created. That's my take on it now, because you're right. I mean, look, almost all the men I know have never done this kind of stuff. They, you know, and I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. Most men have said something that's offensive or whatever, like, got it. But then there's the next level, right? Whereas just like, hey, I'm gonna have a meeting with a woman, and oh, you know, 3 seconds later, I'm in nothing but a robe. I mean, yeah, that is just not normal behavior at all. And so, but I think for him, the excitement was in watching my fear and like, oh God, what do I do next? Because he clearly knew I said, don't touch me, right? And then let's also, as a society, understand, he had a woman who gave him a headshot who said, I'll do whatever you want.
And I'm sure that, right. Oh, like, yeah. That, right. So,
you could have, you know, free friend, she was a beautiful woman on this headshot, by the way. So why the hell you have to like come after me when I clearly say no on off, you know, at the get-go? Therein lies the sickness.
So how soon after leaving did you tell anyone? Did you think like something has to happen to this person?
I mean, I had pretty quickly told my sister, and I have another good friend of mine who's a lawyer. But you know, again, 2008, completely different time. I had even told a therapist at the time, because obviously, you know, it really upset me. And she actually, the therapist told me to go to the authorities. But I mean, even for me at that time, I was like, well, what are they going to do? I mean, you know, it's the he said, she said, and nobody's going to listen to me. Like, he's Harvey Weinstein, for God's sakes. Like, you know, he's going to have lawyers up the wazoo. And all I have is like, my script I can't get made because I, you know, won't shtip somebody for it. And, you know, and an apartment. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I just didn't have any. And that, and therein lies the power struggle. And, you know, therein lies why I just decided to get the hell out of the business, because I never wanted to be treated that way again. I was really at that. He was the last like person for me to like, you know, make me say, you know what, I have to give up what I love, because I'm just not willing to be treated this way.
So you leave the business, and then when does sort of the, when does the reckoning begin that you realize that you can make something happen?
Well, so 2017 is when the articles came out in the New Yorker and New York Times. And as soon as those came out, I mean, I was, you'll understand this, I was getting my, you know, checkup from the OBGYN because I had just had my baby 6 weeks previous, and I had turned my phone off. And when I walked out of that doctor's office, like I turned my phone on, I was like, good God. I mean, it was like a bombarding of, you know, texts. Oh my God, you're right. Oh my God, did you see it? And so pretty quickly.
So were you in Ronan's book?
No, I was not.
Had he reached out to you?
No, he didn't. He didn't. That's why I don't think like Harvey worried about me, because, you know, I wasn't in his radar. But to be honest, like for years previous, I had actually, because 2 years previous, there was Ombra had come forward. But then, you know, they really took her down, as we all know, like they made her sound, you know, she was just after money or whatever the heck, you know, the same situation we all have heard before. But I had tried to do something then, and with another woman that I knew something happened. But, you know, I couldn't get anybody on board, honestly. And I just was like pregnant. That was 2 years before I was pregnant as well. I was like, I just need to focus on my baby. But when this came out, I was like, oh, that's it. And I don't know if too, like I had given birth in 31 minutes with no epidural. And let me just say, once you do that, like really everything is, I had superpower powers at that point, because that was like so painful. I'll never forget it. And I just do it. Like I had two little girls and, you know, for myself included, I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And also it was because Harvey said, I mean, he was so blatantly, disrespectful to us. Like he knew what he did to all of us, but then he gets on national television, like, come on guys, I need a second chance. And my favorite, this is such a good story. I want to buy the movie rights. Like saying that, you know, the women in these articles were lying. And that was kind of it for me. Like that, I was like, all right, that's it, man. And then I was getting already called by, you know, 2020. I mean, because I had told my story to other people over the years, so many times I had told the story, they were like calling me, because then everybody knows somebody who's in the press, right? And they're like, do you want to talk to 2020? You want to talk to 60 Minutes? You know, like, it was like kind of scary. And my husband and I just sat in our living room, and I was like, what do we do? And he's like, you know, a lot of guys are scared of Gloria Allred, so I think we should call her, because Harvey Weinstein would probably be frightened by her. And I literally like contacted her through the internet, and she called me. And that was really like the next steps of it.
How long was it an email? Because she probably gets reached out to a lot. Like, how did she know you were serious? Like, what did you, how much did you include?
It was pretty short and sweet. Again, I was a mom of a newborn. So I just said, I can corroborate these stories. I mean, honestly, I wasn't thinking I was going to do anything for myself, like meaning go and do a press conference. That was not my intention. My intention was simply, I've just figured she's Gloria Allred. She probably had, you know, maybe she's working with some of these famous women, right? And I just simply was wanting to corroborate what happened, because then I could just be of help to them. You know, I wasn't thinking I was going to do my own case at all.
Right.
That was my intention. It was just, I just wanted, you know what I wanted? I wanted justice. I wanted him to stop saying like this stuff didn't happen, when I knew full well firsthand it did. So, you know, the rest is kind of history with, you know, she, when we met her, so, you know, to be honest, when we met with her, she said, you should do a press conference on this because you get more women to come forward. And that was like, my husband and I could have lost everything. I mean, she wasn't willing to to represent me should he come after me personally. So that's a big thing to know. But my husband knew like how much it upset me. And I just really wanted to make a change and like make predators be weary of doing this kind of behavior. So to come forward and to ask other women to come forward was just really all, that's all I had even expected or wanted. And as we know, it's transitioned a lot since that first week.
How far after this was Epstein?
Oh, I mean, Epstein, interestingly enough, had been in, I mean, he had gone, you know, he had his own trials. I don't know if you saw the documentary, but,
I've watched all the documentaries.
Yeah. It kind of only, I know I love watching those too, because for obvious reasons, but then too, it's like when you have little kids, it's such a Debbie Downer. you know, I can't watch them too much because
right. I mean, again, it's like, I can watch that stuff. And sometimes I can't, you know, a lot of the, you know, the Epstein stuff is like, you know, teenage girls, and I have a 13-year-old daughter. And so sometimes I can't. But again, this idea of that a lot of people picture the Law and Order SVU rapist, which is this guy in a coat or somebody, guy on the internet, and has a thing in his basement. And it's not like handsome, successful men that ask you to do something else, and then it becomes this other thing, and people find themselves in these horrible, horrible situations.
Absolutely. I mean, he disgusts me. And I do think, you know, his case, it helped. Like our case, I think all of us always speaking out about any of them, you know, as challenging as it is, I think it definitely helps the next person, which I'm absolutely okay with and happy about, because I do think like Epstein, all that, because when we came forward and people could see, oh, you finally got somebody as on top of the food chain. I mean, he was, if you will, Harvey was like the president of, you know, our business. I mean, he was really at the top, right? And he knew everybody and he made amazing movies. And, you know, he was a talented guy, obviously, but for him to come down, for us to topple that, I think it gave way for everybody else too, which, you know, makes me incredibly happy. Even like USC, you know, like the USC case came forward during ours. And, you know, that's all done. I'm sure you've heard about. No, you don't look
which,
like.
Sorry, which one?
Well, just the gynecologist, you know, I mean, I don't have to go into it because it's another sad story, but in essence, like, other predators get taken down.
Right. Well, right. And Nassar, right. Like I just watched the one on Nassar. That one's really good. Athlete A. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So that one's really good because it's not just about him. It's about the whole like systemic thing with gymnasts, and it's not just sexual, it's verbal and emotional and all the Sarah Halber stuff. So what did, when you went to Gloria, she said, like, we're going to do a class action. Like, how did that part kind of come to?
So yeah, Gloria, and I want to be clear, actually, is now I have to like, look it up. This is horrible. We're having mommy, brain.
It's okay.
Moment. Where was Nassar though? Where was he based out of?
He was in Michigan. That Michigan State is where he taught.
Oh, okay. No, this, because there was another case here in California. Now I don't want to get the wrong school. So anyway,
no. But you're probably, Nassar is not USC. Nassar is Michigan State. So
no. I know, but I have my phone on airplane mode, so I can't look it up really quickly. But I can't remember if it was UCLA or USC. But please look it up, because I don't want to get that. I'm gonna throw anybody under the bus. But they had a gynecologist there who was like abusing college students for years and years and years. So that's what I'm saying is, like, I feel like when we came forward on this subject, it enabled a lot of other women to really recognize what happened to themselves, you know, happened to them, and then feel confident enough to step forward. So with Gloria, though, we did the press conference. We obviously, as she said, it was a tsunami of press. Even for myself, I was not expecting that at all. And then the Me Too movement happened very, like, quick, literally that next day. And so, you know, everything started moving forward, but she wanted to create a victims fund. Okay. And again, you have to understand, like, even for myself, I didn't know, all the ins and outs of what had happened with Harvey. Like, the first week we were like, needs help. But then I started realizing, oh my God, he, like, you know, like, he raped women all the time. This part I didn't know. So obviously, more needed to happen. And there was a class action that was started actually by Beth Fagan, at her, Higgins Berman, a big law firm. And, so in essence, I called them and I just talked to them and then ended up becoming the lead plaintiff of that because the other woman was a Jane Doe and she didn't want to put her name on it. But the reason it was important for me to just step up is we couldn't put Harvey in jail at that point. We were all past the statute of limitations. So this was really the only thing we could do to hold his feet to the fire and to hold him accountable and to keep the story going that, you know, this kind of predatory behavior should not be accepted.
When the case was happening in New York, did you feel like, yes, they're going to get him, or like, man, if they let him go, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. Like, because I trust me, I don't trust any jury. I never believe anything till it happens.
Honestly, a couple of days before the verdict, I work in real estate here now, and a woman came up to me and she's like, you know, they're going to let him go. You know, they're going to let him go. Like, nothing's going to happen to that guy. I know you worked hard, she said, but they're going to let him go. And I literally couldn't sleep that night. I'm sure she doesn't even realize how much she impacted me, but it was really upsetting to me. And I realized, like, oh my God, she's right. Like, if they let him go, like, it really would have been hard for me. I mean, and think of how different my life especially would have been so different. But it was a hard thing to I guess accept that he was going to be let go. And so then when he wasn't, I mean, even though obviously he should have had more counts, but just the two, the survivor group that I'm part of, I mean, good God, what a, like, just a cheer heard through, you know, 50 states. Like, sadly, that guy, he was very prolific.
Right.
And there's so many of us. And I mean, not even in America. I mean, as you know now, you know, from London on, he's literally touched so many lives. So we were all just elated, honestly elated that finally somebody, especially, you know, in our legal system, which is often archaic, stood up and did the right thing.
All right. So then let's talk about how your case has been moving. Cause I had reached out to you and you said, you know, things are about to happen. And I didn't know that you meant like 2 days later, because law, legal stuff is legal stuff. And some stuff goes on forever. We don't have to get into it, but I've been sued as a media company a couple of times in the last year. And I have so much more compassion for people because I now understand, even with my thing, just for one simple part of a case that somebody's trying to move forward, the back and forth that can happen and the legal gymnastics and the cost. So it's like, this is why people settle. It's like, yeah, just like make this stop, not just because of the financial, but it's taking over your fucking life. So anyhow, when you were like, hey, well, we're about to announce. So what has the last, like, I don't know, how has it been, a year and a half? Has it been happening?
No, it's, so we actually signed on at the end of 2017.
Okay.
So it's a long time. And it's much to your point. I mean, the legal gymnastics in our case in particular is that, you know, we started with a RICO case, which is basically saying that Harvey had created a business to do illegal activity because, you know, quite frankly, he did. He had a movie industry, you know, that he really reigned supreme on. But let's all be honest. I mean, often and almost, you know, many times per week, he was abusing women. So I felt like that was a good way to go. I mean, in the long run, that two things happened. TWC, the Weinstein Company, declared bankruptcy. So that was a huge, just a huge kibosher, if you will, in our case, just because it's difficult to do much when their company is going bankrupt.
But did Gloria see that as a very likely possibility, though?
Well, I don't know. First of all, again, Gloria has nothing to do with our civil case.
Oh, okay, sorry.
So, yeah, she has nothing to do with it.
Did your lawyers think, like, probably these guys are going to just declare bankruptcy to not have to pay you anything?
You know, I don't think initially they thought that because it was such a lucrative company. But, I mean, obviously we all knew, like, taking down Harvey is going to affect the Weinstein Company. But I don't know. I guess we had thoughts that maybe they would push him out and bring somebody else in, like, you know. Or, you know, if there's people talking about buying it at the time. I mean, you know, so that was very plausible. But, you know, the bankruptcy happened. And to give you an example, like I flew to Delaware and I had to meet with the judge to be the chairwoman of the bankruptcy. So that in and of itself, like you're talking about the time and the gymnastics, like that in and of itself was such a big it was a lot of time. I mean, there's no better way to say it. It's just, it was.
Right. Because they have to have hearings just to decide if you're the right person and then how those fees are going to get paid. It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And there's two. So just so you know, like TWC owed $250 million. Okay. So, I mean, without getting like lost in the weeds, because I'm sure people don't really care about like the 3 years of making this happen. But the big components, the buckets, if you will, are that, yes, TWC was in a bankruptcy. That was very challenging. So you have to understand, like, then if we wanted to make this victims fund, okay, so the insurers get engaged, okay? So the insurance comes up because he obviously harmed many of us and, you know, all these people were not paid, right? But it is a bloody miracle that we got any kind of settlement because, again, $250 million is owed. So
where does this where does this figure come from?
Because it's based on what the Weinstein Company owed to unsecured creditors. So meaning like anybody, like even yourself would say, if you had interviewed him and then he never paid you, it's that kind of idea. So like even, you know, from editors to actors to very well-known
people. So they weren't in debt $250 million, but it was what they currently owed. Is that like the company's profitable, right?
Well, but at that point they were saying, you know, I mean, look, they sold it. They ended up selling it to Lantern, but for 300 and something million, and there's a little bit more that I think it's 305. But so it was sold. So these movies, like now you'll see, like often it'll say Lantern instead of the Weinstein Company. Some of them, I saw one the other day that still said the Weinstein Company. But, you know, I mean, overall, I mean, the train had left the station, basically. So it was really challenging for me to try to fight for these women to get some monies and some settlement. And why that was important is because you have to understand, I mean, money is power. I wanted Harvey to know and all the other predators, like, hey, if you're going to do this kind of behavior, we're going to come after you. You know, like, and you, as you just said, it's time consuming and nobody wants to do it. I didn't want to do it either. Quite frankly, I have a million other things I could be doing, but I did think it was important to keep, you know, standing up and saying, you know, we're here, we're not stepping down. And we didn't. And even honestly, our legal team, God bless them, because Beth, I mean, the copious amounts of hours, I cannot tell you, to get all those people from the bankruptcy to the other women who are suing, everybody to come to some kind of agreement is amazing. Like, so, and honestly too, like I had a big conversation with a CEO, a woman of a bank who had to take her loan and shelve it to allow this money to come to us. Like she had to move that and take a loss, if you will. So that's why I know it's confusing, but this is the positive of our case is that it took a lot of people to help us and they did. And so, you know, with such a bad guy, I mean, there was a lot of people who also did the right thing.
So how much is in the fund?
So, I mean, it's all broken down. I mean, right now, $19 million is what is left for the survivors. So that's also including the New York AG, which because there are some people who have cases against them. You know, I mean, Harvey had some of them do some pretty heinous things, you know, working for him. And, you know, I don't want to go into it because it's not my case, but, you know, it's pretty horrific. And so the New York Attorney General.
Oh.
So she's
But then the New York Attorney General. How much of a fucking bummer was that?
Well, no, I mean, we settled this with them because there was no other way that we were going to all press ahead unless right. we kind of stuck together. But our case, so just to give you an example too, the other thing that really, the bigger bummers were the letting go of all the directors. So when we started this case, again, it was important for us to say to the directors, you need to be held accountable too, because there was copious amounts of evidence that they knew.
Directors of the board, you mean?
Yes.
All right, people,
yes.
Make sure people don't think you mean movie directors.
Yes, sorry. Yes. Board.
We're not going after, we can get to that later, but... but the right and there's listen there's a much longer conversation. To me, that is part of the most soul crushing is not just someone who's an editor on his films or someone in PR, but the assistant that goes, hey, did you get your per diem, is everything cool there, great, by the way, Harvey's meeting you for dinner, see you later, bye. Like that, those people, like those are like the motherfuckers of the world. Like this is why, like, to me, like Ghislaine is more evil than Jeffrey, because it's like, how could you do that? You know what I mean? So,
well, no, I mean, even the woman who, you know, told me about the meeting, I mean, honestly, I really trusted her. She, and you know, later I had dinner with her.
But at least you were going to meet in a restaurant. She wasn't trying to, you know, she wasn't the person in charge of, you know, that's the example this woman used that was on the one I watched last night was, you know, she's getting these calls from this woman who's like, you know, she's dealing with, hey, your ride's coming, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, you're going to fly with Harvey. She's like, I don't want to fly with Harvey. Oh, don't worry about it. You're flying with Harvey. Like this whole horrible fucking story. Have you heard this one?
I don't know which one. I mean,
anyway, there's so many. I didn't know this about the New York.
Realize like, oh yeah. And that was like part of his whole thing, right? You know, you realize how he was using almost, it was like his own script, right? Like he would do certain things. Like who knew? I didn't know that darn bathrobe was iconic, but I don't know if you remember when the Oscars came out, somebody put up a golden statue of him. Did you hear about this? In a bathrobe?
The one that they showed, the piece of art in LA, that one?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, because now like we realize it's like, it was his uniform, if you will.
Right. But I'm saying I was unaware of what happened with the New York Attorney General until I saw this documentary, this recent one. And then at the end of it, they showed like in one of the little, like, you know, like they do at the end of documentaries, like P.S. he had to step down because he was accused of behavior.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay,
that was what I thought was a bummer.
Yes. Yes. But by the way, they have a new New York Attorney General. So I worked with actually different people. Many of them were actually really lovely in making this case. But yes, I do know what you're talking about, but luckily I didn't have to deal with the bad guy, so to speak.
Okay.
That's what my kids call him.
The bad guy?
They call Harvey, because I was trying to explain to them the other day and on TV, and you know, they always flash his face. I'm like, see, mommy, you know, got the bad guy. And so now, like, even this morning, she's like, mommy, when you got the bad guy, you know, like it's part of our story now.
Right.
So,
all right. So there's $19 million in this fund for whoever
survivor. Yeah. But so, yeah. So if you had an experience, so, you know, now we had the process is that we have to announce, you know, we've obviously announced it, but, we have to put it in the papers. It goes for 3 months. What women who have, you know, any woman, this is during the Miramax and TWC eras. So it's like, I believe it's late 80s to, you know, 2017. So if something horrific happened to you, as you know, many of us with Harvey, you're allowed to, you fill out this, it's a long form. It gets very specific. You also have to, you know, talk to the mediator, or we have a special master. And it's the special master that decides the validity, you know, and there's much more evidence that has to be shown forth to prove what happened. For somebody like me, I've been so forward since day one, you know, I'm a little bit easier than, let's just say, somebody who's just coming out.
Right. So at the end of this 3 month period, is it then divided equally, or you have more trauma, you get more?
Yes, that is actually how it goes. So, you know, definitely if you were raped or you had a physical, something physical, like with me, I mean, even he grabbed me, you know, so yeah, I won't break it down because I don't know everybody who's listening to this, but it gets very defined. It is very defined, and it has, right. You know, so that people
But there
can,
is a trust. There's a trust that exists with this money tucked away. Like this money's going to go to creditors. This money's going to go to these people, employees, whatever. And then there's this 19 and change that is this victim's fund that will be paid out by this trust.
Yes.
Okay. So
it includes the New York AG's claimants as well, because again, you know, it is definitely, it's a very different bar, you know? So there's like the A and the B, or the one and the two. We're in separate camps, so to speak, as far as what we receive based on, you know, the evidence presented. But yes, they're part of this process as well now too.
And what do you say to, I did see some criticism yesterday that said, well, he's not really paying, it's the insurance company, and somehow didn't agree with what you guys are doing.
No, I know. I have a lot to say about that. So one of the main lawyers who doesn't agree with us, I'm going to be very honest. Like, I've met him face to face. I've gone toe to toe with him at tables where I didn't agree with what he was saying. You know, I honestly worry with some of the knowledge that he's giving his clients, because, you know, I really worry about these women who have carved themselves out, because look, the reality is yes, there is absolutely no amount of money that would ever make up for what happened to all of us. Okay. So I agree. And you know, I hate to say it, but he's right. It should be more, and they're right. It should be more, but we also have to get, you know, look at reality. The reality is this company is in bankruptcy. Okay. When a company is going in bankruptcy, it has, like, there's a whole lot of legalities that go into that. There's a whole lot of process in that. And then you also have 250 million people in front of you, you know, money, not people, but you have that money in front of you. So, and then the other gigantic problem is that the six judges released the directors. So with my case included, like, we were going after Harvey and the directors. Why? Because when you know of something bad, like if you've witnessed somebody, you know, getting shot and you say nothing, I mean, like, you know, that there's a problem there, right? So it's the same kind of idea. So, but when the judges released them, that literally, it took, like, you know, the wind out of our sail, because then we could only go after Harvey. Okay. So I just, that's why it's not as much money, because now you don't have
these. So what are they suggesting? What are these other people suggesting you do or should have done, these critics of yours?
This other guy wants us to, like, literally stay into court on this. But here's my problem, Matt. First of all, I've done this for a long time. Stay in court, like, keep going after him and them. But again, if like at the end of the day, you look, he's in jail.
Right.
Okay.
You could win a gazillion dollar lawsuit. If you can't collect any of it, it's pointless, which is what happens with most of the time with these.
110%. And you know what? I love my family too much, honestly, to drag them any farther. That's right. The truth. Furthermore, it is re-traumatizing to myself. And let me tell you, to all the other women as well. So I'm not also willing to drag them through. And I have a case. I could have done something more. But here's the problem. Then I can do something, but all the other women can't. And I also don't feel like that's right. That bothers me. You know, good for you. You each want to go do your own thing. A+, keep going. You know, we've carved them out. They're not part of our settlement. So I don't know what the problem is. Keep going. Do your own thing. But I worry, how are you going to get that money back?
They're not.
No, because then you got to also go into the back of the line of the 250 million that's owed. This is why the negotiations were so challenging. This is why, I mean, I'm proud of what we did, because people were willing to step aside and let us, as in the survivors, have this money and not give it all to all the unsecured creditors.
Here's the part I don't understand. And if you don't know, or it's too much, because I actually am, because of the world I live in this obstacle racing world, I was very aware of a bankruptcy, how a bankruptcy happened, how a company came out of it. but the company was failing, right? They did have all this debt. They were bought for this small amount. They gave it to a trustee to work out X, Y, and Z. I know that a company can make itself look bankrupt if it wants to get out of stuff, but it seems like that wouldn't be allowed with this company that, like, seems profitable. Like, isn't there a bunch of money somewhere?
Well, so we do. I mean, they had forensic accountants, and listen,
and they still came up with, yep, they're broke. They have their 250.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, there's other components of this case that, like, take on its own life, but overall, yes.
Like how about just residuals on these movies for the next 100 years?
Well, but now Lantern bought it. I mean, it had a, if you will, shelf life. Like once they were saying we're going bankrupt and we're filing, I mean, then all that stops too. You know, Harvey then is now like, yes, he had real estate and all this other stuff too. So like all of that, but I'm just saying we had forensic accountants all being looked at. And I'm not saying that these other women couldn't, they may be awarded $1 million and we only get 500,000, let's just say. Okay. But again, it's about, will they get that money ever? That's all I'm saying.
No, like, they will not.
I feel happy that not one more survivor has to go through a case and has to go sit in a courtroom and deal with all the drama that we had to deal with. These women who, and even the women who were in the criminal case who stepped forward, you know, let them, allow them to have some of this settlement. That's amazing. And they don't have to, like, do anything further, if you will, in a courtroom. I mean, that is the gift. And this, the people who are coming against us, they say too, like, well, Harvey doesn't have to accept any wrongdoing. Guess what, people? He wouldn't have. Yeah. I mean, that's a great comment. I love that. Well, yeah, that would be awesome that he has to say he did something wrong. He's in a criminal. Right now, he's fighting for his life. He has a whole nother thing going on in LA. He wouldn't have said he did it anyway. Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying?
He's going to die in jail.
Yeah. I mean, come on. And, you know, just be happy with what we have. Like, we now fought very hard and we did get something. And I got to tell you, there was many a time where we thought we would get nothing. And again, the other women, may they get a lot of money. I really hope so. And this other lawyer, not my favorite, but, you know, I hope they do. But again, when are they going to get the money if the company is bankrupt?
Well, I, you know, Stacey and I talk a lot about this as things have gone on. And here's my humble opinion. As long as there are men in places of power, they are going to say and do creepy things. They're going to improperly use their power. Women too, I suppose. Like, it is human nature, right? Some of it more egregious than others. However, I do believe with Fox and Charlie Rose and Harvey and all the industries that it's touched, that the really, really horrible old white guy is probably like, that guy's not going to come back in 30 years. We're not there. It's not going to, because more women, because more women, more younger women are going to walk in there and going to go, what did you just ask me to do? I'm tweeting this out now. And that guy's going to get fired. He's not going to be able to become the head of the studio. Again, it's never going to go away, but I feel like that certain dinosaur is gone. What do you think?
I think it's close to being gone. I think the other component to that is that, which is why this class action was so important to me, is that corporations have to, you know, get with the times. And if you are allowing somebody to do this kind of behavior and letting them go because they, quote unquote, make you a lot of money, and you too need to be held accountable. So I do think it would have been great had any of the directors been, you know, called to the stand, if you will, but that didn't happen. And may the next generation, you know, help do that. Because I do think whether we win or not, every case is moving that needle farther, right? Is it to a better place for all of us. But I think, yes, you're right. As an individual, I definitely think women are much more empowered to step up, because I can tell you, I sure as hell was not empowered when this happened to me. And now, you know, it's a very different world. And I know we're still going to deal with some of it, but I do think that predators are much more weary and scared. And you know what? Good. Have a little fear too, my friend.